I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A marvelous book out now is In the Garden of Beasts, Love, Terror, and an American Family in Hitler's Berlin. It takes us to 1933 Germany. The Nazis have just come to power, and Adolf Hitler is completing his first year as chancellor. The unlikely ambassador to Germany from the United States is a mild-mannered academic, William E. Dodd. He and his family moved to Berlin, and it's through them that we see Germany as it was. Hindsight is always 20/20, but in this book, which reads like a novel, we see life as it were as Hitler tightens his grip on power. We see the gathering storm as Jewish persecution mounts and attacks on Americans occur. As well, we see the reaction from Dodd, the American State Department, and their contemporaries. We also see the charmed life led by his daughter Martha, who is fascinated and entranced by the New Germany, which leads to romance with figures within the Nazi regime. Eric Larson joins me from Toronto now. He is the award-winning author of 6 books, including the critically acclaimed and best-selling Isaac Storm, Thunderstruck, and The Devil in the White City, which was a number one bestseller on the New York Times list. This book, published by Crown, is this week also number one on the Times list. The website for more is at ericlarsonbooks.com. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Eric Larson. Good morning, Mr. Larson.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Now, when did you first encounter William Dodd? I mean, is he? I mean, if you study history and the sort, I mean, is he a well-known figure?
Yeah, he is not at well. At least prior to this book, he was not at all a well-known figure. He tends to be in any of the big histories of the Nazi era. He tends to be really essentially overlooked. You may find a glancing reference to him now and then, but I found him to be a very interesting character, and I'm delighted that everybody else overlooked him.
Yeah, and when was it that you first, when he first hit your radar, I guess?
Well, yeah, when he first hit my radar was about 5 or 6 years ago. Now, that's not to say I've been working on this thing solid for 5 or 6 years, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I was looking for an idea for my next book. I don't know why it is, but typically when I start a book, when I finish a book, I have no other ideas lingering that I can just pick up with when I'm done. So I'm always starting with a blank slate, and I was feeling kind of unproductive. And just to kind of jumpstart things, I went to a bookstore and began browsing the history section of the store just to kind of see what books would get me excited, what books were sort of an automatic turn off to me, and so forth. And I came across a book there, Face Out, that I'd always meant to read, but it had always been kind of an intimidating book. You know, 1,200 pages, teeny type, no photos. And it was The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by William Scherer. So I thought, you know, I have nothing else to do. I might as well read this book. Yeah. I mean, that's really how it happened. This is the sausage being made, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I took the book home, began reading, and I was about a third of the way through the book when suddenly my imagination just kind of lit up. And that happened when I realized, I probably should have realized a lot sooner, but when I realized that, you know, William Scherer had been there in Berlin, and from 1934 on until he was kicked out when war with the U.S. began, he'd been there in Berlin, he'd met all these people face-to-face, Goering, Goebbels, Hitler, all these people we know today to be really totally evil characters. But he had met them at a time when they had yet to declare their true nature, if you will. And so suddenly I started thinking about that, thinking, wow, what would that have been like at that time, with no one knowing the ending, of course? What would that have been like to be in Berlin, to see the world around you? How would you have felt? All that kind of thing. So then I quite deliberately started looking for characters, did a lot of reading of the big histories, the small histories, the intimate histories like memoirs and diaries. And it was at that point that I stumbled across the diary of William E. Dodd, who is, you know, again, one of the key characters. And soon after that, I stumbled across a memoir by his daughter Martha. In the second case, it wasn't quite stumbling. I believe after I finished Dodd's diary, I knew there was a memoir, and so I went looking for that. But boy, when I found her, I realized maybe these are my characters.
Yeah, I'll ask you about Martha in a sec, but let's focus on Dodd. What was he like? I mean, he had an upbringing in the South, is that right?
Yeah, he was born in North Carolina. He was he was really very unlikely picked to be ambassador to Berlin. In fact, his selection startled just about everybody, including himself. But he was a mild-mannered professor of history at the University of Chicago. He had a decent national reputation, but not the kind he felt he really ought to have by now. He was, at this point, he was tired of academia, and what he most wanted to do was finish this book he'd been working on forever, actually a multi-volume series called, strangely enough, called The Rise and Fall of the Old South. Hmm. So really, he was kind of a, when it came to diplomacy, he was really kind of a, very much a naive. I mean, he had no business being made ambassador to Germany.
And there was the old joke that it was a mistake that on the part of Roosevelt's White House, yeah, that they called him for the job.
Yeah, in fact, it gave rise to the nickname Telephone Book Dodd, the belief being that somebody went through the phone book trying to find the Dodd that Roosevelt wanted and chose the wrong one. That's completely untrue, by the way, but nonetheless, it is interesting as a manifestation of the surprise that was felt within the State Department when Roosevelt chose to select Dodd for the post.
Now, he had gone to Germany early on for his studies, is that right?
Right, that's correct, and that's part of the baggage that, well, in this case, nice baggage that he brought to Germany. In the 1890s, he had done what many students did. He had gone to study at a German university, the University of Leipzig. He was doing his doctorate there. Inexplicably, he was doing his doctorate on Thomas Jefferson while he was at Leipzig. Can't imagine how difficult that was. But, he had had this experience, and he had loved Germany in that time. He had found it somewhat bellicose, but he had loved Germany, he had loved the experience, loved the people. This was a time when every day a young woman would place violets on his pillow in his rooming house, and so he had this really nice recollection of Germany. Part of what he brought to Berlin, you know, he brought his historical perspective, which was, you know, this belief that statesmen ultimately behaved like statesmen, and there was always a certain level of rationality. Plus, he brought this past experience in Germany, this warm past experience, and then of course he arrives in Berlin and finds something very, very different than what he had experienced and what he would ever have expected.
So 1933 Germany, what were the Americans thinking about this new regime that was in power?
You know, from as best I can tell, they weren't thinking very much. They knew, of course, that Hitler was kind of a crazy guy and that the regime had been absolutely brutal in its early months. But I think it is very indicative that Roosevelt chose to appoint this really unqualified guy to the post. I think it's very indicative of how the U.S., the administration at this point, really felt about Hitler and the Third Reich. I don't believe at this point, again, we're talking 33, 34, that they saw it as all that big a major player on the world stage, at least not quite yet. The U.S.'s primary interest at this point was in getting Germany to repay its billion-dollar debt to American creditors. That was their top priority. That was Dodd's primary mission. His other mission being, according to Roosevelt's mandate to him, his other mission was to serve simply as a standing model of American liberal values.
And so at what point did Dodd have an idea how this story would end, or did he?
Well, you know, during the most of the action in the book takes place in the first full year that the Dodds were in Berlin, and that stretched from the summer of 33 through the summer of 34, which turns out to be a crucible period in Hitler's career and a period whose meaning really the world failed to acknowledge. Dodd, being on the ground in Berlin, gradually came to see the reality of Nazi Germany, the oppression, the preparations for war, the pathology, of the craziness of organic pathology of Hitler, but even through that, the events of the summer of 1934, which is when the climax of the book takes place, even through the summer of 1934, Dodd nurtured a belief that was actually fairly commonly held in this era, that the Hitler regime could not survive, that Hitler was simply too crazy to be able to stay in power too much longer.
Let's move to Martha for just a bit here. She figures prominently in the book. I was reading about the book, and one writer compared her to Pamela Harriman. I mean, what does she look like?
Okay, let's see. Martha, diminutive, or rather. I mean, she's petite, 5'4", I believe. 5'2", sorry, 5'2". Was it 5'4"? I can't remember my own book. but she was a petite woman, full figured. I mean, very, very appealing figure, blonde, and very much a flirtatious young woman. Also very smart, but very flirtatious. And the combination was apparently quite devastating for men. I mean, she had that thing that that some people, you know, men and women, seem to have. She had this thing that just absolutely inflamed the passions of men, both young and actually not so young. I mean, by this time, before she arrived in Berlin, she'd actually had an affair with Carl Sandburg, poet, who at that point was about 55. She had broken two engagements to be married and was at that point extricating herself from a marriage to a New York banker. They were in the midst of divorce proceedings. So she was a woman ready to cut loose, and she did so.
And so what did she think of the whole, the Nazi government, the sort of the regime there? She was enthralled by it?
At first when she arrived, she really pretty much fell in love with what she referred to as the Nazi Revolution. She saw it as a good thing, a positive thing. There was just so much energy and pride in the young people that she encountered. And she did really become rather enthralled with it, especially from the first couple of months. And it took a lot initially to begin to persuade her that things were not quite as rosy as they seemed.
So did she have influence on her father?
You know, she clearly had some influence on her father, but there's really not much in the historical record that would indicate that she had a whole lot of influence over his opinions. I mean, he would become quite irritated with her in this period when she was enthralled with the Nazis. He would refer to her as his little Nazi. So I don't really think either had much influence over the other, at least not initially. Dad gave her a lot of rope, incidentally. He was very respectful of the fact that she was a 24-year-old woman who had already been around the block a bit, if you will, you know, had been a married woman and so forth. So they really led more or less independent lives out of the same house on Tiergartenstrasse in Berlin.
And so as ambassador and the daughter of the ambassador, they got around the social circles of the diplomatic corps and the sort. Did they get around the country? Did they get to mingle with regular people, say?
Yeah, they did. First and foremost, of course, their life was in Berlin, and they led a very glittery kind of life, which Martha loved, and Dodd did not. he was not that enthralled, if you will, with the whole circuit of banquets and so forth. But they did try to get outside the country, and in fact, on one early trip, it was really kind of a compelling moment. They all traveled together briefly. Dodd, his wife, Martha, and her brother Bill, and a correspondent friend, all traveled together in the same beat up old Chevrolet that the Dodds had brought from home to Germany to demonstrate Dodd's frugality. But they were traveling, and they split up at one point. And Martha and Bill and the correspondent continued and found themselves in Nuremberg. And they arrived late at night, just as this parade was coming around the corner near their hotel. And as the parade got nearer and nearer, they saw that the people in the parade were stormtroopers, and that they were leading along something between them that at first Martha couldn't make out. Turned out to be a young woman who was assaulted, shaved, and otherwise disfigured because she had been consorting with a Jew. She wore a plaque over her neck saying, "I have given myself to a Jew." And you know, the interesting thing is, at first, Martha was not as repulsed as one would have hoped her to be. Her reaction was, well, maybe there's an explanation. Maybe there's more to it. Maybe this is just one small incident and can be forgiven because of all the other great things that are happening. But it was a very telling moment.
Yeah, we read some of the writing, the dispatches, the letters that the Dodds write, the anti-Semitism is disturbing to read in the year 2011, but was it the norm? Or I guess it was accepted practice at least, right?
Well, you know, both Dodds exhibit the kind of, what I guess we could call ambient anti-Semitism that existed throughout much of America at that time, and actually throughout much of the world. There was an opinion poll done that found some astonishing percentage of Americans who felt that Jews had too much power. Dodd, I found particularly interesting in this respect because, for example, at one point he sends a confidential dispatch back to the State Department in which he complains that he has too many Jews on his staff, and this is interfering with his ability to deal with the Third Reich. Another very interesting conversation, Dodd's second formal conversation meeting with Hitler, Dodd, while conversing with Hitler, tries to really seems to be trying to find common ground with Hitler about what they both refer to at this point as the Jewish problem. And Dodd tells Hitler, astonishingly, he says, you know, we have a Jewish problem in America, too, but we've chosen to solve it in a different way. And he's referring to, limiting the leadership roles the Jews can have and quotas at universities and so forth, which I find a kind of an astonishing remark. Now, of course, Hitler doesn't buy it. In fact, whenever the conversation turned to Jews, he completely lost it. And in one very interesting moment, considering this is 1933, long before the Holocaust, Hitler just explodes and says, if the Jews keep this up, I will put an end to all of them.
And he didn't think much of that remark?
Dodd did not think much of that remark at all. No, by now, Dodd is beginning to really appreciate the Third Reich for what it truly is.
How many meetings did he have with Hitler?
In this period, 33-34, two formal meetings. He encountered Hitler at other times in other places, but never for this kind of lengthy conversation.
How did the Nazis regard Dodd, and for that matter, how did they look at Martha?
Well, as became clear later, the senior officials of the Third Reich saw Martha as being really rather slutty and amoral and doing ill to the Dodd family reputation. The perception of Hitler, the perception of Dodd by Hitler and others, was a little bit more complex. Hitler dismissed him as a non-entity, sort of a professorial guy who couldn't even speak German well.
Yeah.
I think, though, that among lesser, I don't want to say junior, but four notches down on the in the Reich hierarchy, that is to say, below the level of Hitler, Goering, and Goebbels. There were some interesting opinions about Dodd. I think he had a lot of respect from, for example, the foreign minister, von Neurath. I think he had a good deal of respect, ultimately, from the vice chancellor, von Papen. So it's a complicated picture on that score.
Now, in reading the book, it's tempting to look at what's happening and sort of rewrite history, if you will, and see perhaps if Dodd could have changed the course of history. As the writer of this, were you tempted to look at mistakes, perhaps, even that Dodd made?
You know, what I really tried to do was to create this capture, this moment in time, adhering very strictly to the point of view of the key characters, Martha and Dodd, and then, of course, the various secondary characters that were important to the narrative. You know, can I at this point, with the 20/20 vision of hindsight, can I say that Dodd made mistakes? Can I point to anything that he could have done that could have changed the course of history? No. I mean, I don't think there's anything, frankly, that Dodd could have done to change the course of history. It was the ultimate thankless job. But to Dodd's credit, he did not kowtow to the Nazis, which many other diplomats did. He offered protest in quiet ways that, while they did draw the attention of people in the State Department, nonetheless did not get him ejected, at least not immediately, from the country, and allowed him to continue in the post, standing as this as the model of American liberal values that Roosevelt wanted. For example, he steadfastly, while he was ambassador, refused to attend the Nazi Party rallies that took place each September, these massive propaganda things, because he did not want to be used as a propaganda tool. He did not want to be seen as endorsing this kind of regime. He also felt it was a party affair, not a state affair. Now, this caused him some problems back in the State Department. Some folks felt that was unduly provocative, and it caused him a lot of problems with the Nazi hierarchy. They were annoyed that Dodd would not go to the rallies. And personally, I think that's a positive. I mean, anytime you can tick off the Third Reich, I think you've done a good thing.
Now, surely there's something in this book, a lesson perhaps, or something that we can glean that's relevant to today's world. Do you think there is?
You know, I think the key message today is that freedom, while it may seem to be a bedrock thing that we in America and Canada are going to have forever, I think the important message here is that you have to pay attention. You have to pay attention to what's around you. You can't engage in willful blindness because things can slip away more quickly and more readily than you would imagine. That's not to say that I want to raise any kind of alarm. I think both countries are fundamentally in good shape in terms of their freedoms, but it's just very important to pay attention and correct where necessary.
Say, did Dodd finish that book on the American South?
He never did.
No.
He never did. No, it's kind of a tragic thing for him, and both characters are actually ultimately tragic characters, in large part because of the Berlin experience.
It must be gratifying to have such wonderful reviews for this book and the best-selling status now, number one.
You know, it is gratifying, but may I also say it is also a tremendous relief because, part of me wonders now, I'm so delighted that people love the book and so delighted what they're bringing to the book. Because, it could so easily have been the case where readers might have said, I've read too many books about the Nazis already. Happily, that has not happened. Happily, people get this is new, it's pretty fresh, very fresh. And it opens a new window on a period that that historians tend to ignore in the course of the broad sweep of events leading to the war.
This is a great book, one that's difficult to put down. Congratulations, Eric, and thanks for this.
Thank you very much.
The website for more, ericlarsonbooks.com. The book is called In the Garden of Beasts, Love, Terror, and an American Family in Hitler's Berlin. It's published by Crown. Its author, Eric Larson, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.